Secrets can lead to misunderstanding. Misunderstanding can cause fear. Everyone knows what fear can do. We are here to learn and shine the bright light of truth on these stories. You will know why Show Me Scares.
Hello.
Hello there.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm great. I'm Shayla.
And I'm Terry.
Welcome to the holiday edition of Show Me Scares.
Whoop, whoop.
Actually, we're not doing anything with the holidays, but I hope everybody had a great holiday, or maybe you're still holidaying.
Like us.
Mm-hmm.
I had to work.
Yes, that's why we're still holidaying.
So our holiday starts today.
Mm-hmm. So I want to apologize for this being late, but I came up with a plan to kind of sandwich this in between where two episodes would have went and just do one single episode because it is a busy time of the year.
It is. Mm-hmm. Work life and home life.
For sure. I mean, we're trying to get everybody's gifts and get them wrapped and see family and do what you can around COVID. But then work, I mean, I work for a nonprofit and people are very, very generous and giving this time of year, which makes things super busy. Not a complaint, because that is an excellent problem to have.
For sure.
It's wonderful. I can't believe this is my first year in nonprofit, and I cannot believe how generous people are.
There's still some good people out there.
Every now and then. I've seen a majority of them over the last few weeks. It's really nice, but it does make getting things done difficult. And so things like a podcast that I make no money on has to kind of be pushed to the back for a minute.
Sure.
But I wanted to do something. I decided to do something a little bit different this week. And that's one reason that it took me so long, because I didn't think it would take as long to do this story as what it did. It turned into a much longer, more involved story than I thought it was going to be. And so
that's good, since we're doing one for the rest of the year.
Yeah. So have you ever heard someone refer to someone else as Typhoid Mary?
I have.
Yeah.
Never knew what it meant.
Me either. So
I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, I thought that was just like something people said. Mm-hmm. But there's a story behind it, and that's what we're going to talk about today. And the funny thing about it is I went back home for Christmas, and back home, I mean, where my Nana lives. And so I was telling her and my aunt, her sister, about us doing Typhoid Mary on the podcast this week. And she was like, what's that? And
what?
I was like, what?
I figured she'd know.
I know. Huh. I said, you've never heard anybody call somebody Typhoid Mary? And they were both like, no, what are you talking about?
Wow.
Yeah. So that, yeah.
I should ask my dad.
You should.
I will do that.
But your dad has been out. Like, he's a trucker, so he's been out and he's seen other areas of the world instead of the same 1,000 people his entire life.
That's valid.
That's a big, like, thing, you know? Mm-hmm. But I feel like I've heard that phrase.
Or back home.
Yeah, like my entire life. So I was a little surprised. And, like, at first I thought they were joking. And I was, no, you know, Typhoid Mary, and they had no clue what I was talking about.
Interesting.
So if you haven't heard of Typhoid Mary, tell me, like, email us and say, hey dude, you big jerk, I ain't heard of it. That's fine.
We're not ditching anybody, we're just
it just, yeah, since I mean, to me, anytime somebody's like hacking their head off or something and they're too close to you, it's like, whoa, Typhoid Mary, back up. That's just something you say. But apparently not. I don't know.
Maybe so, it's just us.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Okay, so Typhoid Mary, the woman. We're talking about Mary Mallon. It's her name, okay? She was born in Cookstown, Ireland, what's now Northern Ireland, in 1869.
So we're going way out of Missouri.
Well.
Or did she come over to the States?
She did.
Oh, okay.
She migrated to the United States at the age of 15. And she lived with her uncle and her aunt for a little while before she, you know, got out on her own. She worked as a servant, a maid, but then she became a cook. So a little bit, I think it's nice to be able to somewhat picture who we're talking about. And there was things written about her, obviously. and so here's a little description that George Soper, we're going to talk about him a lot, actually wrote about her. Mary Mallon was 5'6" tall, blonde with clear blue eyes, a healthy color and somewhat determined mouth and jaw. She had a good figure and might have been called athletic had she not been a little too heavy. Nothing was so distinctive about her as her walk, unless it was her mind. Mary walked more like a man than a woman, and her mind had a distinctly masculine character also. So there's Mary. So do you know anything about typhoid? Typhoid fever?
Yeah, it's an affection due to like a salmonella type thing. Like people can get fever, abdominal pain, nausea, of course, headaches, just basically like flu-like symptoms.
Salmonella typhi is the bacterium.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were going to say that.
Well, I'm lucky to be able to say salmonella.
That's true.
Hey.
Well, the thing about typhoid fever, though, is it killed 1 in 10 of those that were infected.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Right. That's pretty high mortality, I think.
For sure.
I don't want to be in a crowd of 10 people and no one of us is going to die.
I don't want to think of that.
See?
Especially these days.
Yeah.
And I think... you can have the symptoms 6 to 30 days before you can actually show them. Or,
yeah.
Right?
Ain't it? You could, I mean, you're talking about like the incubatory period it's not showing any symptoms at all. And then boom, you're sick. And maybe you contracted it 6 to 30 days before. Like we see with COVID, that can take 14 days. I think it's changed now. But, you know, you can be living your best life, spreading it, and not know it for... 2 weeks, or in that case, a month.
Gosh.
In New York City alone in 1906, 3,467 confirmed cases of typhoid, and 639 of those died.
Whoa.
Yeah. It spread through contaminated food and water, which again, we're in the early 1900s, so it's we don't know a lot about sanitation.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, it was thought to be a disease of the poor because
that makes sense.
They're unclean.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that. They did. In the summer of 1906, a family rented a summer home on Oyster Bay in Long Island. On Long Island, however you want to say that. By late August, half of the people in that house were sick with typhoid fever. The owner of the summer house, remember it was rented, so this is the woman who owns it, Mrs. George Thompson, again, women weren't allowed to have first names back then, hired George Soper. He was a sanitation engineer and also an expert on typhoid fever. So that's why we're going to talk about him a lot. His job was to investigate what had caused this outbreak. A New York banker, General William Henry Warren, was the one who had rented the home. He and his family of 3 and 7 servants stayed there for the summer months. By late August, 6 of the 11 people in the home had fallen ill with typhoid.
So they're not poor people.
No.
So that's interesting. Yeah,
that's not supposed to happen.
Right.
Yeah. And so now people start paying attention, right?
Mm-hmm.
It had been studied immediately by the people who were considered experts in typhoid, and many reports had been written on it, but the case hadn't been positively identified. I mean, the cause of the case had not been positively identified. It was feared by Mrs. Thompson that if they couldn't figure out the cause, it would make finding tenants for the next season all but impossible. At first, Soper thought that the outbreak had been caused by a batch of contaminated clams.
That sounds gross anyway.
The problem with that theory, though, was that some of those that had fallen ill had not eaten the clams.
Oh.
So there goes that theory.
But could they not make contact with the people that had ate
the clams? Absolutely, they could. So I think I don't know. I think the idea was he believed, and you'll see when we keep talking, that it was one single meal where they all got it.
Okay. They're just trying to narrow it down.
Yeah. So he carefully examined the entire property for the contamination. He checked everything, even all the stuff that had already been checked. He's testing it again. He hoped that he could just find something that they had overlooked, something that had been missed along the way. They conducted tests on the cesspool and privy, the well, and the overhead water tank. He tested the food supplies in the pantry, even the manure that fertilized the lawn, and the conditions of the house next door.
Oh, wow. So he's digging deep.
Oh, yeah. He's hoping that he finds something anywhere, even next door. But he found absolutely nothing.
Wow, that's scary.
Yes. The only possibility outside of all of those things was a human carrier. Soper was aware that patients had seemed to have recovered, continuing to be contagious for several weeks. Could there have been someone in the house that had recently recovered from typhoid? German studies as early as 1903 had reported cases of people that seemed healthy, but who carried the disease in their bodies and shed it in their urine and feces. We'll talk a little bit more about that eventually.
That's just disgusting.
Well, that's what happens. Nothing of that sort had yet been documented in the United States. Through the process of elimination and questioning, Soper rested on the cook as a possible carrier. She was nowhere around.
What the heck?
And she had left just after the epidemic, which had occurred over 6 months prior.
Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm. Good luck trying to find her. He tried to find out everything that he could about her, but he found there wasn't too much to really learn about her. Mrs. Warren told him the cook was a good plain cook. She was paid $45 a month for her service. She had been hired through an employment agency ran by Mrs. Strickers. The cook kept to herself and didn't fraternize with other servants, so they didn't really have anything to share about her either.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing they did mention was that she was not all that clean, and her name was Mary Mallon.
Oh my.
At this time, Mary Mallon was 40 years old. And she came to work at the Oyster Bay House on August 4th. The first illness was August 27th. The last person to fall ill was on September 30th. Or 3rd, sorry. Soper narrowed down the time period in which infection took place within 7 days. And eventually determined which meal it was that caused the outbreak.
Look at him go. Mm-hmm.
Soper said, "Where there are many servants, there is little food that a cook handles that is not subsequently raised to a temperature sufficient enough to make it harmless. I found, however, that on a certain Sunday, there was a dessert which Mary prepared and of which everyone present was extremely fond. This was ice cream with fresh peaches cut up and frozen in it. I suppose no better way could be found for a cook to cleanse her hands of microbes and infect a family."
Oh.
Soper went to the employment agency. Oh, God. He explained the reason for his visit, and he asked Mrs. Strickers to see Mary's employment history. Mary turned out to be kind of hard to find. The employment agency gave him everything they had, but there wasn't a whole lot to go on. Mary appeared to be a person who moved around a great deal. She did not remain long in any situation. Soper spoke with several of Mary's former employers. He found out that as she had moved from employer to employer, she left behind a trail of typhoid household epidemics.
Oh, there it is.
At least 7 out of 8 families she worked for.
No, wait. Does she know she's doing this? Because she just keeps bouncing around.
Right.
Oh, that bitch.
Each story was pretty similar. The outbreak seemed to emerge out of nowhere, sweep quickly through the family without the source ever being revealed. Mary, the cook, was not once suspected. In 1900, so 6 years prior, Mary was working in a summer house where a young man visited. Just 10 days later, he fell ill from typhoid. The young man had also visited East Hampton, which was close to an army camp in which a typhoid epidemic was like in the
going on.
And so it was assumed that that was the cause of his disease. In December 1901, the laundress in a New York City home where Mary lived and cooked was rushed to the hospital and died from typhoid. Members of the family also fell ill with symptoms of diarrhea and fever. The case was never investigated at all. That next year, Mary went to work for a prominent New York lawyer, Coleman Drayton, in his summer home in Dark Harbor, Maine. The first case of typhoid occurred just 2 weeks after Mary Mallon arrived in the home. Within 7 days, there was a second person suffering typhoid, and a few days later, another. Out of 9 people in the home, 7 contracted typhoid. Wow. Mary and Mr. Drayton were the only two that did not get sick. Drayton had been sick with typhoid years before, so he was now immune. That's why he didn't get sick. Mm-hmm. Mary worked tirelessly beside the lawyer to tend to his sick household. He was so grateful to her that he gave her a bonus of $50.
That's a lot back then.
On the 1st of June 1904, Mary came to the household of Harry Gilsey in Long Island. On June 8th, 7 days later, the laundress became ill, and within 3 weeks, the gardener, the butcher's wife, and her sister. The servants lived in a house separate from the family, which is all who's getting sick. And this time, the illness only hit them. Dr. Wilson, the superintendent of hospitals for communicable diseases, a branch of the New York City Health Department, investigated that outbreak. He believed that the laundress was infected and brought the typhoid into the servants' quarters.
Oh.
Someone else got blamed.
Right.
He never found the explanation of where she contracted it, though. So he might have been right.
But she was at the start of it.
Yeah. Soper finally located Mary Mallon in March of 1907, working as a cook in an old-fashioned high stoop house on Park Avenue in New York City. The laundress in the house had been hospitalized with typhoid fever, and the only child in the home, a little girl, was dying from it.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
Soper explained to Mary that he believed she had been unknowingly spreading typhoid. He requested specimens of her urine, stool, and blood to test for the disease, the bacteria. He promised her that the city would pay for everything, even her medical treatment should she need it. At this request, Mary charged at Soper with a carving fork. Soper escaped to the sidewalk and later remarked that he felt rather lucky to have escaped.
Good Lord.
He said apparently Mary did not understand that he wanted to help her. He knew Mary was the cause of the outbreak, but he didn't know how. He wanted to find out. He felt a great deal of responsibility in the case. Under the right conditions, he said Mary could precipitate a great epidemic.
Wow. You think she's been, she probably felt like she's been attacked.
Probably.
Or threatened.
Mary Mallon was what would come to be known as an asymptomatic carrier. So that's why I said we'd talk about it in a minute. She displayed no signs or symptoms, but was infected with the pathogen. So there's other kinds of carriers, like incubatory carriers, which is what we talked about earlier, where they have it, but they don't show symptoms yet. It's not gotten to the symptom stage yet. It's still in the incubatory stage. And so they can spread it during that time. There's also convalescent carriers, which is what they thought was the case in the Oyster Bay house, where they have had the disease, recovered from it, but they're still contagious for so long afterward. But Mary had never had typhoid.
Oh, wow.
Never had any symptoms, but she was still spreading the disease while it lay dormant in her system.
Like all over the place.
Yeah.
For years.
Yeah. Even after being ran off with a carving fork, Soper still sought out Mary. He was still, like he said, he felt responsibility in this case. He had to find out what was going on and hopefully save some lives doing so.
Yeah, if she lets him help.
Right. The next day, he found her at a boarding house that, according to him, was disgusting. It was filthy. Ugh. He found out that Mary was spending her evenings with a man of a questionable character. You know how they talk back then. And this man stayed on the top floor of that boarding house. And she was bringing him food. So he's real risky.
Yeah.
Soper became acquainted with that man. And he was permitted to see this man's room. He took him in. Soper said he did not care to see another one like it.
Oh, gross.
Mm-hmm. It was not improved by the presence of a large dog, of which Mary was said to be fond.
I'd have nothing. Yeah.
Soper was waiting for Mary at the top of the stairs one evening when she arrived. And I think he had another doctor with him, but I read that differently in a couple different places. Not that it matters. I just try to be thorough. He attempted again to explain to her that though she seemed healthy, she was carrying and spreading the germs that caused typhoid. He later said, "Mary was angry at the unexpected sight of me, and although I recited some well-considered speeches committed to memory in advance to make sure she understood what I meant and that I meant her no harm, I could do nothing with her."
Wow. Maybe she knew then. And just didn't give a crap.
Mary argued that she had never had typhoid. It was rampant in the city and her employers had suffered no more than anyone else in New York City. She was pretty pissed at being accused of spreading something when she was in perfect health. Soper knew that Mary was going to soon be leaving her current placement and she'd be gone again mm-hmm. and he'd have to chase her down. She would undoubtedly spread typhoid onto new families wherever she went. Because she won't listen. Mm-hmm. He says, "Dude, you're not sick, but it's in your body." And she's like, "But I'm not sick." And he's like, "No fucking shit.
I just said that."
Yeah.
But people are like that.
Oh, we've seen it this year, haven't we?
Oh my gosh.
It's like, maybe if I bang your head off the wall, will that help?
Stop it.
Okay. Sorry.
Moving on.
Yeah. Soper knew that he needed to get someone with more power than himself if he were going to stop her. He took the case to the commissioner, Thomas Darlington, and Dr. Herman M. Biggs, the medical officer of the New York City Health Department.
Wow.
He said about this, "I called Mary a living culture tube and a chronic typhoid germ producer. I said she was a proved menace to the community and it was impossible to deal with her in a reasonable and peaceful way. And if the department meant to examine her, they must be prepared to use force and plenty of it."
For sure. Wow, I love how they talk back then.
I know. That's why I try to quote as often as I can. March 19th, 1907. Dr. S. Josephine Baker and inspector with the health department. She's an inspector. I said and. I was trying to enunciate and I put a D on the end of it. Not how that works. She knocked on Mary's door. Sorry, I can't speak. Mary slammed the door back in her face.
Oh, of course she did.
The next morning, Dr. Baker came back, but this time she wasn't alone. She brought with her a health department ambulance and 5 police officers.
Oh, snap.
They were there to arrest Mary Mallon. They rang the doorbell. When Mary saw Dr. Baker and the officers, she tried to slam the door. But an officer was able to get his foot into it, you know how they do, mm-hmm. and force it open. Mary ran back into the house and disappeared. They searched the house and they were questioning other staff, but they couldn't find her.
What the hell?
I know, right? Dr. Baker noticed, looking out the window, that there was a chair pulled up next to the fence that ran along the back of the property.
That bitch peeled out.
There was snow on the ground and there was clear footprints leading from the back of the house to the chair. She jumped the fence. That's hilarious. After a 3-hour search, Mary Mallon was finally located.
Yes.
Dr. Baker later told about how Mary struggled and cursed. Baker told her she only wanted the specimens and she could go back home, but she refused. So Dr. Baker told the police to pick her up and put her in the ambulance. I am done with this bitch.
She won't listen.
The ride to the hospital was quite a wild one, she said.
Glad it wasn't me.
Mary's stool was tested while she was in custody and tested positive for typhoid. Shocker.
No way.
She was still not convinced. That's what I'm saying. Knock her in the head. I'm over it. Okay.
Continue.
Soper came to visit her at Willard Parker Hospital Isolation Ward about 3 weeks into her stay. He said this. When arrested, she was regarded as dangerous and unreliable person who might try to escape if given the chance, so she was locked up. It was not an attractive or particularly comfortable room, and there was no reason why a strong, active woman of 40 who felt herself to be in perfect health should be contented with it. And Mary Mallon was not. He told Mary that he had come to see if they could work together to get her out of there. He reminded her of all the times he had tried to get her to help him and she had refused. And she had also refused others who wanted to do the same. He said this. You would not be where you are now if you had not been so obstinate. So throw off your wrong-headed ideas and be reasonable. Nobody wants to harm you. You say you have never caused a case of typhoid, but I know you have done so. Nobody thinks you've done it purposefully, but you have done it just the same. Many people have been made sick and have suffered a great deal. Some have died. You refused to give me specimens when it would have helped to clear up the trouble, so you were arrested and brought here and the specimens taken in spite of your resistance. They proved what I charged. Now you must surely see how mistaken you were. Don't you acknowledge it? Mary didn't say a word. She just sat there staring back at him. So he continued. Well, I will tell you how you do it. When you go to the toilet, the germs which grow within your body get up on your fingers. And when you handle food and cooking, they get on the food. People who eat this swallow the germs and get sick. If you would wash your hands after leaving the toilet and before cooking, there might be no trouble. You don't keep your hands clean enough.
Simple task.
So now Mary's stare turns to a glare.
How dare you say I don't wash my hands?
And he keeps going. The germs are probably growing in your gallbladder. The best way to get rid of them is to get rid of the gallbladder. You don't need a gallbladder any more than you need an appendix. There are many people living without them. Mary, I don't know how long the Department of Health intends to keep you here. I believe that depends partly on you. And I can help you. He went on to promise her that he would help her get her out if she would just cooperate. He also promised to write a book about her without using her real name, sorry, mm-hmm. and that he would give her all of the profits.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Why is he being so nice?
He's just trying to save get people.
Her. Yeah.
He only wanted her to answer his questions. So what did Mary do?
Ignore him.
Without saying a word, and with her eyes glued to Soper's, Mary rose from her chair, walked to the bathroom, disappeared within, and slammed the door.
What a B-word.
Soper took this as a no and left the room. Soper did publish her story, and it gained such wide attention that people gave her the nickname Typhoid Mary.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. With her diagnosis being confirmed, Mary was moved to North Brother Island and forced to quarantine.
The simple task of just agreeing to help would have kept her from being quarantined.
Yeah.
God.
I mean, maybe. They say that, but...
Right, but wouldn't you try?
I would try.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh my God, I'm making people sick. What can I do?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The doctors tried many things to rid Mary of germs within her body. The only thing that they knew would work would be the gallbladder removal. On North Brother Island, Mary lived in a cottage that was built for the superintendent of nursing. It was more than likely the nicest place Mary had ever lived.
Oh, well, that's why.
It had an indoor bathroom, and it also had gas and electric in 1908.
Wow. Yeah. Why would she want to leave there?
The hospital brought her food, and she cooked and ate alone. She lived that way for 3 years in forced quarantine. Mary was a prisoner that had never been charged with a crime. In 1909, it was on those grounds that she sued for her release, stating she had not been given due process of law. The law does, however, allow the health department to forcefully quarantine people when they are a risk to the public, which she clearly was.
For sure.
She was told by the health department that all she had to do to be released was to have her gallbladder removed. She refused, saying nothing was the matter with her gallbladder, so she would not have it removed.
Well, then you have to say quarantine.
Mary's petition for release was dismissed. Just 7 months later, in February of 1910, Ernst Lettery, the new health commissioner, released her. Mm. There were stipulations to her release, though. She had to check in with the health department every 3 months and never again work as a cook. Mary disappeared.
Like she's going to listen.
Right. For a time, she worked as a laundress, but being a laundress only paid about $20 a month. You remember she made $45 to $50 a month as a cook. Nothing for women paid as well as cooking. Mary began working as a cook under false names. She went by names such as Marie Breshoff and Mary Brown. The two big employment agencies for cooks both knew Mary by sight, so she couldn't use them because they knew all about her.
Yep.
And they knew her by sight. Like, she worked for the one, Mrs. Strickers. Mm-hmm. The other one also knew of her. So she couldn't get the high-end clientele that she was working for before, where she made all the money, because the employment agencies knew her.
Mm-hmm.
And so that bridge is burned, let's say. So what does she do now? So instead, since she can't go there, she begins cooking in restaurants, hotels, and hospitals.
Gosh. Not giving a crap who she makes sick.
She went all over New York and New Jersey. Wherever she went, typhoid epidemics broke out. And working in those kind of establishments obviously meant much higher numbers of people are being infected by her. During the time that she was running all over spreading this, it's believed that at least 85 cases were caused by Mary Mallon.
Wow.
I can't even remember how many deaths. I don't think I ever saw.
Mm-hmm.
In 1915, Mr. George Soper received a phone call from a doctor, Edward Cragen. He was the head obstetrician and gynecologist at the Sloan Hospital for Women. He was requesting Soper's assistance with a typhoid epidemic. At least 20 staff members had fallen ill. He explained that some of the servants had, oddly enough, nicknamed the cook Typhoid Mary. George goes to the hospital and recognizes the description given to him as Mary Mallon.
Mm-hmm.
And they also show him a letter, and he's like, that's her handwriting too. This bitch.
He studied her way too much.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When the health department and the police came for Mary this time, she didn't put up any fight.
Really? I figured she'd try to run again.
Nope. I feel like at this point she went, shit, they were right. Because she's paying attention now and she's seeing, damn, everywhere I go, typhoid follows.
What an idiot.
Yeah. She was sent back to her little cottage on North Brother Island, where she would remain the rest of her life.
Good.
She no longer made escape attempts either. She gave into it. The health department paid for her cottage and all of her food. She even gained their trust after not trying to escape and was permitted to go to the mainland for shopping trips and such.
Well, she's living the high life.
Kind of, yeah.
I mean, put me up in a better home than normal and bring me food. Let me go shopping whenever
I mean, want. But what are they going to do? They're saying you can't live amongst the public. You're going to be a prisoner. They have to feed her and take care of her because...
It's true. Yeah. And they can't literally put her in prison because...
Right. Wow. Because she would be a threat there too. Mm-hmm. She made it clear during that time that she did not ever want to discuss anything about her past.
Because she was wrong.
Well, yeah, but if it was brought up, apparently she would give her signature glare.
Oh, is that what it was like?
Yeah, and it would end the conversation.
Oh, God. I'd be like, bitch, just explain. Why did you go ahead and do it?
Stop doing this. She's not going to answer.
That's true.
On Christmas, 1932... a delivery man found Mary on the floor of her cottage, paralyzed, having suffered a stroke. For the next 6 years, Mary lived in the hospital, unable to walk, still paralyzed on her left side. She died on November 11th, 1938.
I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
No. She was only like 69 years old. They couldn't find any family members. Nobody had ever heard her talk about any family or anything. But, so they held a funeral for her, which 9 people attended, and no one attended her graveside service.
That makes me want to cry. Yeah. Now I feel sorry for her.
Yeah. Just so, but I mean, that's a life in isolation. But I would think you could write to people. I don't know. I don't know about her. It seems like she kept to herself and stuff, though, mm-hmm. beforehand. So, for me, I'm like, you're going to put me on an island in a little cottage and
feed me?
Give me all the food I need? Like, I just won the friggin' lottery.
But you're all alone.
Yeah.
That's sad. You don't get to talk to nobody or visit anybody.
I'm sure they would let me have a dog. I mean, if they let her go to the mainland to shop, I'd be like, I'll never go to the mainland. Just bring me a dog.
I have no words. You don't want to mingle, go to parties.
No. That's like torture to me.
You like going and seeing your family.
Yeah. I could ride them. Talk to them on the phone. You're freaking
horrible.
FaceTime.
Dear God. There is no FaceTime. Sorry.
Not in the early 1900s. I understand that. But at that time, would you really miss not talking to anybody? Because...
You're talking to me.
Listen to me. What I'm saying is, you didn't have a phone. I mean, I don't think. Maybe they did have phones. I don't. But I mean, you're used to, like, when you want to talk to somebody, you write a letter if they're far from you. That's just normal. I would think it would be much easier back then, too. I don't know. And she's got the hospital right there if she gets sick. And she could go and talk to people. She couldn't cook for them. And they couldn't trust her not to cook for people, so she couldn't be out and about.
That's valid. And she was living crappy anyway, so now she's living, like, the high life.
In this cute little cottage on an island.
Indoor bathrooms, even.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
I think it's great.
Which part?
Well, I mean,
arrangement.
She doesn't seem like she liked it too much, but she gave into it finally. After who knows how many people
died. Would you have given up your gallbladder?
I don't know. I think so.
If it wasn't,
that's what I mean.
Harming you.
It seems
like you don't have your gallbladder now.
No.
They took it from you.
I'm living fine. I know they ripped it out. No, obviously everybody, I mean, a lot of people get their gallbladder out and it's no problem. In that time, it was a little bit more serious. People died in gallbladder surgery mm-hmm. because they just weren't as good back then, you know.
That's like, what I'm saying. Would you give up your gallbladder to chance that, or would you stay in quarantine, or would you promise not to cook and make less money?
I think it comes down to who you are and what's most important to you and what's your priority. I mean, is your priority to be out of quarantine and
make money?
Yeah, but I mean, it could be that they take her gallbladder out and they're like, oh, actually it's living in your bowels. Then I what? Know, you've just lost your gallbladder and it's in your bowels instead. Because how do they really know that? They did give her different stories at different times where they would say,
but you'd quit in your cooking bowels. And you would try to do everything not to make people sick, well, right? Yeah.
I'm not a monster.
You monster.
I mean...
But... I mean, you have this scientist, right? Is that what he was? Telling you all this, and do you believe him? Like, this is just a random guy coming up and
but
following
it's
her.
Not a random guy. This is a guy who's a specialist and has studied it.
I mean, I'm on your side here. I'm just saying, right now, a scientist shows up at your door and tell you all this. Some random guy.
I'd be like, let's test it and see what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about, if we can talk about COVID. If somebody came and said, hey, you're a carrier of COVID, dude.
Dude.
You need to quarantine. I would be like, yes. But, you know, that's me. But, I mean, if they said you always have to stay 6 feet away from everyone and you shouldn't go into public any more than you absolutely have to. I mean... That sucks, but that's the hand I was dealt. I'm just saying, like, it sucks for her that she had to go into quarantine for pretty much her life. But that's just how it is. I mean, people are born with all kinds of problems, and it's really believed by a lot of people that she was born with typhoid, that her mother had typhoid while she was pregnant with her.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sucks. But it is what it is.
You gotta do what you can to protect each other.
Yeah. So, basically, if you were Typhoid Mary, what would be your choice? You got those three choices. Well, really two choices. Have your gallbladder out or stay in quarantine the rest of your life.
I would quit cooking. If I knew that was the reason why people was dying and getting sick, there's no way I would want to do that.
I know. I'm like, okay, I can take a shot. I mean.
Quit cooking, wash my hands, oh dear.
But a lot of people believe that during the time that she was working in the hotels and restaurants, that she probably was being careful and washing her hands and stuff because she had been told that. Now, did she? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think she was malicious. I think she was ignorant and stubborn. She would not admit it. And so that's why I think she probably was trying to be careful and wash her hands and thought she could get away with it that way. And it probably just wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. What kind of antibacterial soap did they have at that time? You know, that's like true. How good did it actually work to wash her hands? So I tend to believe she probably was trying the last time. And whenever they came for her, that's why she was like,
oh, darn, that didn't work.
I tried, you know, I tried what he told me. But then do you want to have your gallbladder taken out? I mean, it boils down to, do you want to be able to not be quarantined for your life? To go out and do things, are you willing to have your gallbladder removed? So would you have your gallbladder removed?
That's like, you have a 50-50 chance that's what it is, too.
Kind of, yeah. I read somewhere that they found the germs in her gallbladder once she died, that they checked. I don't know if it was like a full autopsy or not, but they did find that the gallbladder was where the germs were. And so had she had her gallbladder out, she would have been not, she couldn't have given it. If that's true or not, I don't know, you know, as far as like science back then, but I don't know. Would you have your gallbladder out?
Mm. It's easy to say yes these days.
Yeah.
That's just a simple surgery.
Well, that's just it. You have to decide what quality of life you want.
Mm-hmm.
Are you locked away by yourself for, I think it was 23 years, but from the time she was locked up till she died? Or do you get your gallbladder out and now you're able to go out and be with people and have some kind of social life, mm-hmm. and not be alone all the time for 23 years? Well,
you know me, I'm a social butterfly. I like mingling. And
is it worth dying for? Again, that's quality of life. Do you feel like being alone and
alive and being alone in a room?
Yeah. Do you think that's life, or is it worth your life, risking your life in a surgery to be able to go out?
I think we're totally opposite on this.
Why?
Because you would rather be quarantined.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but it wouldn't be for the same reason she was. Because I think I would probably say, after a few years, I'd be like, I mean, let's take this shit out and see what happens. I may want to go and cook some for somebody sometime. Like, let's just see. You know, I think after a while, it would get old. And you'd be like, maybe we ought to try it. Because... Mm-hmm. I'm going to kill myself if I have to stay here very much longer. You know what I mean?
Exactly, like, yeah.
It's worth it.
I can only be alone so long. I drive myself crazy.
Yeah.
That's why you get drove crazy all the time.
So today.
Yes.
Right now. If you were Typhoid Mary and they said, you got to live in this island, in this cottage, for the rest of your life alone. Or we take your gallbladder out and you go live your best life.
Take that bitch out.
To me, quarantine would be great, but I think it would get old and I'd be like, we're gonna have to try this.
I wouldn't last a month.
No, you wouldn't last 2 days.
Hey.
No, I do. I think I would eventually do the surgery and be like, it's coming down to my quality of life is just terrible. So what's the point of being alive if I'm not
enjoying
able
life.
To live?
Mm-hmm.
So, let's try it. What does it hurt?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I just think that's really funny and like a nice little thing to think about. Like, people had real problems then. It was like, hey, you can have your gallbladder out and go through something that could risk your life in order to not infect people. And people did it. People did it all the time. She's not the only one that was an asymptomatic carrier. She's just the one that got the nickname and brought it to light that that was such a thing in the U.S. So there were people who did have their gallbladder out,
mm-hmm.
and did go on to live fine and not infect anybody. So there were people willing to go through that.
Right.
In order to not infect someone else. So Typhoid Mary.
It's a good one. It was a good one to bring up.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
It's scary.
It is scary.
But it's not just these days and age that's going through a pandemic.
Yeah.
Like, it's happened.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's happened a lot.
Yeah. And I think some people forgets that this isn't the first time this has mm-hmm. happened and people had to do stuff to... be uncomfortable.
Well, that's the real the thing is every time it's happened, it's been fake news. It's called something else, but every time it's happened, it's not been real. It's been made up, and it's been, they're lying to you. It's not true. So that's not new either. That's mm-hmm. not, it's always going to be that way.
Some people's going to react like that.
Yeah, which is fine. I'm not taking the other side. I'm not saying, mm-hmm. I'm just saying, like, I want to point that out, that it's not, that's not new. That's not a new thing that's happening either. It's always been that way. And it's right. always going to be that way. So I think we just know about it more now because social media. I mean, that's really kind of the poison of everything now.
Oh yeah. And
because everything spreads so much quicker,
different articles for different things, and yeah. this is the truth, no this is the truth, and
mm-hmm.
just because it's on the internet it's true, and just all that stuff.
Yeah.
People will mouth something off on the social media and not even read up on what they're mouthing about. Right. And then it like creates a chain. People believe them. That's their resources. Yeah. And it's like, come on, guys, dig deep.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to end the year with this one because COVID has been 2020.
Truth.
And so I wanted something that we could tie it back to the year as a whole. And I think Typhoid Mary
was a good one.
Was like, okay, we have to do that. So I hope you enjoyed this one. And God, here's to a good 2021.
Yeah, here's to next year, guys. Hopefully.
I'm hoping, everybody's kind of figuring maybe summertime it's gone.
I doubt it.
I'm hoping. I mean, because they're talking more spring to summer. So I'm hoping it's sooner rather than later, because I am so ready to feel like I'm living again. And I don't want to be irresponsible and be the person who makes somebody sick. So that's why we don't do as much as we'd like to. So I hope you guys had a great holiday and have a wonderful,
safe
new year. And yeah, hold your loved ones tight. Everybody has a few less this year now, so that's important. Thank you for hanging out with us all year, and we will see you January 4th. Actually, we won't see you, but we will talk to you. January 4th, I think.
2021.
Yeah.
Here we come.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's our year.
Yeah. Don't get too excited.
I'm sorry.
Be very careful what you say.
Tiptoe into 2021.
I have big hopes, but we'll see. Thank you guys for listening and sticking everything out with us this whole year. And hopefully we've brought a little bit of fun to a terrible year. And we will see you soon. We love you very much.
Stay safe, guys, and healthy.
Bye.
Bye.